on Hester Panim, and that's why we make a big fuss over miracles that take place during the Galus, because during the Galus is a time of Hester Panim, and that's why the Nes that's related to Galus is a much greater Nes than all others. It's a childish thing to think my Chanukah that the candle burned, the oil burned for 8 days. It's a fantastic miracle. It's not really such a big deal that the oil burned for 8 days. In the Beis Hamikdash, every single day, they had in the Menorah the eight places where they put the seven cups where they put oil. And they put it into the seven cups, and they put the same amount in every one. And it was just enough to burn through a long night. Burn for whatever the longest night in Eretz Yisrael is 16 hours. And the Ne'emar Rabbi burned for 24 hours. That was a miracle that happened every single day. It happened day after day, year after year, for 410 years in the Bayis Rishon, and 420 years in the Bayis Sheni. And presumably it happened in Mishkan Shiva for 369 years. It happened as a constant thing. Klal Yisrael was used to seeing oil burn longer than it's supposed to burn, like an old miracle by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not a big, not a big miracle that we should make a yantif. Right? The Gemara says, "My Chanukah that the oil burns." It's a big miracle. The oil burns every day. The oil burns. You know, Elisha did a neat miracle. He had this lady who had this little bit of oil, and said, "Close the door and pour the oil, and you'll fill up all the vessels." So this little bit of oil, she became a millionaire. Borrowed Caleb from all her neighbors, and a little bit of oil, she filled up all the vessels. So we're going to make a yomtiv over it. It's been a much bigger miracle than oil burning for 8 days. Because the miracle of Hanukkah is not the miracle. It's not the fact that God can make oil burn for 8 days. But it's what it represents. The Bayomim Ahim Bezman Hazeh of Ner Hanukkah is the fact that even Bizman Hazeh, that even in the Tekufa of Hester Panim, of Galus, in the time of Mistyamnim, the time of Klal Yisrael itself, is ripped apart by the forces that ripped Klal Yisrael apart in the Galus. Now, Palpikain, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is watching over us. And that's what Chanukah is really about. That's the idea of what Chanukah is. And the Meshech Chochma says this in regard to benching. In benching, we have four brachas in benching. The first three are Dairaisa. The first three are Minatayra. The first bracha Moshe wrote. The second Yeshua wrote. The third, in the form we have, it was written by Shlomo HaMelech, but it existed in a different form earlier. The first three brachas always existed. The fourth bracha, which is Hateva Meitiv, the bracha that ends Al Yechasreinu, when was that instituted? By Beitar. After the Romans, after they destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, two generations later, there was a rebellion in Beitar, and the Romans came and destroyed Beitar, and the bodies were left out in the field to rot, and they were piled up, and nothing happened, they didn't rot. And eventually there was the Chalakfura. So because of that, Atayva made it, we made a bracha. That's a little pathetic, you know, that Jews have to make a bracha because we're so thankful to the Bayrei Olam that after HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed all of Beitar and all the dead bodies were left out in the field, so there was a tekfura. It's like not the happiest type of commemoration. No, you make a yomtiv for the day that you're not going to make a yomtiv, or the day they bury the bodies, make a bracha. So the Meshech Chochma says that benching in its form Minatayra, the Daraisitika form, is a form which expresses the continued experiences of Klal Yisrael. Maisha, B'Shashiyar Lam Amon, the first bracha. Yeshua, B'Shashin et Mesul Arad, the second bracha. The third bracha talks about Yerushalayim, the uniqueness of Yerushalayim. So there has to be a fourth bracha that talks about Galus. When we transfer from Gula to Galus, there's got to be a bracha that commemorates the continued experiences of Klal Yisrael. So that really the Al Yechasreinu bracha, the bracha Tayva Meitiv, is in a way the Chanukah of benching. It expresses the Bayomim Ahim Bezman Hazeh, that even Bezman Hazeh in Galus, there's still the Rebbeinu Shalom still watches over us, even in tragedy, even in Hester Ponim. On the contrary, in the biggest Hester Ponim, which is Beitar, in a way, Beitar was a bigger Hester Ponim than the Churban. The Churban took place, it was the destruction of a Malchus that was evil, a Malchus that was bad. So there was a Churban. I mean, they put a golden eagle in the heichal. So what's so there was a korban, but Beitar were the frumis, the Haredim Beitar. Right? They weren't perfect people, but they were frum people, and they were pursuing kiyum mitzvahs, and they were destroyed. Tremendous hester upon them, and Afal Pi Kein, the Kaddish Baruch Hu showed that even in the hester upon him, Kaddish Baruch Hu is still there. And we commemorate our Tzayv HaMeitiv with the bracha of Al Yechasrei. That's the bracha of Golos. That's how the Meshech Chacham explained. So that the commemoration of Chanukah from whatever one of the many different areas of Machshava that you're going to hear about Chanukah in the next 2 weeks, whatever explanations you're going to hear are all tied to a Golos experience of Klal Yisrael, as opposed to the Geula experience of the time of the Beis HaMikdash. The Rav Tzadik here seizes upon one aspect of what took place, the failing of the Chashmonaim, the failing of Matisyo Ubanov, the mistake that they made. The mistake they made was Notlu Malchus La'atzman, that the Chashmonaim took for themselves to be the kings, so to speak, of Klal Yisrael in this post-Chanukah period. And that lasted for over 100 years, a little over 100 years, that the Chashmonaim were in control, and that was a mistake. And because of that mistake, the descendants of the Chashmonaim did not survive. Eventually, all of the Chashmonaim died. There was no continued lineage from the males of the Chashmonaim. And that's a tremendous punishment. So Tzadik here explains at least one aspect of their mistake. And I'd like first to learn the aspect of the mistake and then try to make an impression as to what it has to do with Golos as opposed to Golos. There are two things: to understand the mistake and then try to attach it to the Golos story of Hanukkah. So let's learn the words of Rav Tzadik and then we'll see. Now you all remember, because we've spoken about it many times, that there are seven Nidais: Chesed, Gevura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hayit, Yesod, and Malchus. It's like not fair, but I've spoken about it so many times I'm sick of going through it again. So whoever started coming this year is going to be out. You have to get the tape. But I've explained to you the different aspects of the seven Midas. Maybe we'll explain it again. But one thing is clear: when we went through the seven Midas and the seven what we call the seven Ushpizen, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So Avraham is Chesed, and Yitzchak is Gevura, and Yaakov is Tiferes. And then Moshe, Aaron, the Yosef are Netzach, Hayit, and Yisoid. And then David is Malchus. Those are the seven Midas. Seven Midas being the seven types of behavior of which a neshama, Kaviyach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, reveals himself in these seven, and a neshama is capable of these seven. And each of them is attributed to someone. Now, obviously, the Kayanim are descendants of Aaron, so that Hayit is the Nida of Aaron HaKayin, and therefore the Chashmonaim that follow them. Matisyo the Notzchan, Matisyo who defeated the Yavanim, Yidua b'Sefer Pri Etz Chayim, it's known as the name of Pri Etz Chayim, that's the Arizal, Shetikein HaHayit. He was the second, his Nida, the Nida of the Kayanim, the Midav Hayit. Okay, Namrinan Al Hanisim Baida Ayin Shah. That's why we say Al Hanisim in Maidim, in the Bracha of Maidim, which is Hayda, which is related to Hayit, and not in, I would say, where we say Yalavi Avayit, because it's related. It's related to Hayda. Vukayin, Besachu Zarai Lamalchus. And the children of Matisyo were Zeichet to Malchus, Afal Tishin Nenshuazah. Because they were kainim and they took for themselves too much. They took maluch. Kamash Kotav Ramban Apostle Kol Yosef Shevet, the well-known Ramban in Parshas Vayechi, that the Hashmonah were punished because they were over on Lo Yosef Shevet Yehuda. V'ayinu de'inyin Malchus, eini yelach halukas kavod. What is Malchus? Malchus, what Tzaddik says, is nothing more than a measure of honor. Shekem avarchen alav shecholak mekvaydai. Chazal say that there's an inyan to go see a king. There's an inyan to go see a king. I don't know how seriously he's supposed to take that. He's supposed to see a king. He says, shecholak mekvaydai lebri yisa. I don't know how much of a chiyuv is it to go see a king. I see when the president came that that Rabbanim went out to go see them. Make a bracha, shecholak mekvaydai. I don't know how important that is. He used to run over because of Pesachar to see a king. So I don't know myself. I received, along with I'm sure many others, an invitation from President and Mrs. Bush to be at the White House next Wednesday for a Hanukkah party. The invitation says that George W. and what's his wife's name, Laura Bush, invite you to join in for a Hanukkah celebration next Wednesday. I'm supposed to go because you're supposed to see the king. Hmm? So I'm sure they send out invitations, probably, you know, they divide it between the Orthodox, the Reform, and the Conservative. I don't know how many people they could fit into the East Room of the White House, but let's say they send 500 Orthodox, 500 Conservative, and Reform. So I'm sure all the Reform and Conservative go. And the Orthodox, you know, are busy sitting and learning, so, you know, except for Lubavitch, who seem to always go to these functions. You know, they must think there aren't too many Orthodox rabbis in America, right? Because well, the previous president, they would not have made a bracha because he didn't behave in the manner of Malchus. But this one, at least, behaves in the manner of Malchus. You know, I figured that if you need a little bit of advice, maybe I would go. But so what is it? What's it all? It's all COVID, right? It's all COVID. No? COVID. I got an invitation. It's also COVID, right? Should I hang it up? Should I have a better prayer? So, so what do you? What is it to be a president? So the Tzaddik says it's really all, it's all fluff. It's all halukas hakavod. He explains more than that. Vein hakavod mepas atzmusai, rak mepas ziv hoy melech hamispashet mimenu. So translate as you wish. It says the kavod of Malchus is from the ziv hoy melech. Malchus is above hoy. Akein zachi Yehuda shetofas betelech haydoi yamidas hoy b'malchus. Ahinu shevet loishlim shu ahayin malchus eizbar. So he says that what? That malchus is related to hayid, but it's higher than hayid. And the mistake of the chashmonaim, what was that? If hayid is related to malchus, why were they not allowed to take it? Midas hayid aharin u hayid nukva, midas habusha keniska. V'nemer hein yoyru mishpatecha liyakav. L'shevet Levi also got psak halacha. Kam hu hayid malchus, kamay shomru ma'amalki rabbanan. Nemer kavi yichal yichal yichacham yichal. Elu shu malchus p'loi shevet ma'ishlim. That's the point. There's two malchus. There's malchus de nukva, which is hayid. Malchus de nukva, nekeva, the concept of nekeva is to be passive. It's a malchus that's passive. It doesn't have shevet. It doesn't have the power of the stick. It doesn't have the power to enforce its rules. The Malchus of Yehuda is Lo Yosser Shevet Yehuda. That's how they explain that the Malchus of Yehuda is Shevet, is the stick, the power to enforce. The Malchus of Rabbanon, of Aaron, is Malchus, which is Hayid, which is not a Malchus in the sense that you don't have the covet, you don't have the pomp, you don't have the power, the Shevet, but you have the Hayid, which, if someone respects the Hayid, he's going to listen to you. That's Mamalki Rabban. That's the level of Malchus which applies to Rabban. So that there is a distinction here between Hayid and Malchus. The Malchus of Hayid is to be able to say a daya and people follow it voluntarily. Because they respect. What is Hayid? Hayid is splendor. Something that people can have an appreciation for. What is Malchus? Malchus is more than that. It's something that has shevet in it, that has power in it. What was the mistake of the Hashmonaim? The Malchus of Kuhuna and the Malchus of Torah that they were allowed to have. the malchus of makal, he called it afterwards, of the stick, of the shevet, that they had no right to take. That was their mistake. Their mistake was taking malchus. Now, as far as regards to chashmenoim, that itself is a very important lesson. That people, everybody who's successful in something, tends to think that because they're good at this, they can do something, they're sure they can do even more. Did you ever hear of the Peter Principle? Peter Principle. Peter Principle is a very important principle to know in life. The Peter Principle, I guess a guy named Peter came up with this. The Peter Principle is that in any hierarchy, in any business where you have different levels, people rise to the level of incompetence. It's a very important thing. It means if you work in a business at a different level, so if you're good at a job, they give you a promotion. If you're good at that, they give you another promotion. You keep on getting promoted until you're incompetent. When you're incompetent, they don't promote you anymore. You just stay at that job that you're incompetent of. You follow what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? That people keep on getting promoted until they reach a point where they're incompetent at doing their job, and that's where they end up staying for the rest of their lives at a level of incompetence. So that you have, for example, this happens all the time in the yeshivas. You have a Rebbe who's a good Rebbe, a great Rebbe. They promote him to be principal. He has no clue how to be principal. But if he's a good Rebbe, they make him principal. So then, he's a disastrous principal, and no one understands why he was ever appointed principal. Why was he appointed principal? So that's the Peter Principle, right? Because he keeps on getting promoted until he becomes incompetent. And this is something that happens all the time in individual people's lives, is that people who achieve something feel that because they achieve this, they can achieve something more. So they promote themselves, so to speak, until they reach something, they bite off more than they can chew. And then that's the mistake. Now, it's a bit of a stira, because in Yiddishkeit we always try to move up. We always try to promote ourselves to get to a higher level. But when a person overreaches, so then he becomes incompetent at whatever it is he's supposed to be doing. Chashmenoim were very good at Hay. That was their level. The Malchus that they sought to achieve was never successful. And it's incredible, because you would think if an army comes and defeats, or at least chases the Greeks out of the country, and a miracle happens right afterwards in Erev Chanukah, which certainly made everybody very happy. And you would think that their malchus would be like Tzvi HaMelech, you know, they'd be a whole Christ, all because of the Tshuva, and everything would be wonderful. And yet, their continued, if you learn, read about the history of Malchus Chashmenoi, not only was it unsuccessful in firm terms, but it wasn't even successful. You know, the Greeks kept on coming back. It didn't finish. They never really got the job done. Because they overreached. They were supposed to have Hoid, and they overreached for Malchus, and Malchus was not something that was theirs. So that was their mistake. And with this you really could answer Ramban's kasha on Rashi. With the idea that Rav Tzadik is saying here, can answer Rabban's kasha on Rashi and Chumash. Rashi, in the beginning of Baal Oischa, Rashi says, the famous first Rashi, right? I love quoting Rashis before Shemini, because people heard of them, right? And I heard of them, right? Till Shemini. The Rashi's after Shishi, you forget it. And, you know, one of my kids was in a Masifta where they got the herd every week on the Rashis from Chamishi till the end. That was the Seder in the Masifta. For Chamishi, that's like, you know, hitting below the belt. You know, you have to learn it, you know. But Rashi says that the Baal Oischa said there is Lama Nisbacha Parshis Menoira the Parshis Nisiyim, because when Aaron saw that the Nisiyim, each shaved had its own chelik in the Chanukah HaMizbeach, the Chanukah HaMishkan, so Chol Shadaita, because Shor HaSed Shol Chol Gadol V'Shalahed, like the Menoira. Menoira is your chelik. So what's Ramban's kash? Ramban has two kashes, but the Ramban's first kash is that it doesn't make any sense. Aaron had a lot of things to do in the Beis Hamikdash. He wasn't upset about the running of the Beis Hamikdash. He didn't need the Menorah. Aaron was where Aaron and his children were the Beis HaMikdash. He was upset about the Chanukas HaMishkan, that he had no chelik in Chanukas HaMishkan. So Kesh Baruch says, you're going to light them in oil. In fact, the Ramban, that's not Chanukas HaMishkan. That's running the Mishkan. That's not Chanukas HaMishkan. Look at Kashi. So Ramban says, no, that Kesh Baruch was Meramis to Aaron, the Nes of Chanukah, that it's going to come a time when you, Kayanim, your descendants, are going to do Chanukas HaMishkan. Have the Beis HaMikdash, you'll have your own Chanukas HaMishkan. What's with the Kasha on Rashi? According to Reb Tzadik, it's very good. Because Fakert, Aaron was being told that his place is not in the Chanukas HaMishkan. Aaron's place is not in the Malchus of the... He has his place. His place is in running the Mishkan. His place is not in the... But making it a Mishkan, that's not the Levian's place. It's not the Kayanim's place. That's not your job. The mistake of the Chashmonaim was in separating the jobs. Your job is not Chanukas HaMishkan. Shalcha b'dayl v'shalem. You light them in Aaron. What does that mean? That means that your job is the running of the Mishkan. If the Nisayin of Aaron Ubanam is to be limited to the Hayd and Nukva, to the Hayd, the passive Hayd, the running of things, and not the enforcing of things, or even the building of things, so then that's a Pshat HaRashi. It's not a problem. And for character, it's related to the Chanukas HaBayis of the Chashmonaim, which was not really building a new Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash stood. The Greeks defiled it, and they just put it back into order. And their Chanukah was not building. Their Chanukah was lighting the menorah, a regular mitzvah, but lighting every day. And that was the Chanukah, was the, so to speak, a ready-to-be dedication. So this is the Tzaddik's message regarding the Yavanim. I think it's a different type of story. I don't know, I never heard this idea before. That the Chashmonaim Zavera was not understanding that they're at Hayin and not at Malchus. Now, if I told you at the beginning that the Yom Tif of Chanukah is the Yom Tif of Kolos, and what we have to understand is the idea of Kolos, then I think we can have a better appreciation of how this ties in. The Tzaddik writes, the emes be made by Yesheni Shaya Pekida Bialma, about 4 or 5 lines from where I stopped. Be made by Yesheni Shaya Pekida Bialma by Hayarai Malchus Yisra. In the Bai Yesheni, which was not a full Geula, it was a Golas Geula, there was no Malchus Yisrael. Arkein Le Molach Melech Mi Beis David. Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu send a Melech Mi Beis David? Why did it happen in the Bai Yesheni? You read a Navi that the descendants of David came by the Bai Yesheni and they expected to be king, and it never happened. It never took place. What happened? Why did it happen? So he says, because it was a Pekida B'Yalma. It was not the period of Golos, of Geula. It was Pekida B'Yalma, something in between. And because the Chashmonaim took it naturally, they heard this Shehevet Kol Zeich HaLamai, who Malchus La'avadim Shein Ruyim LaMalchus Klal. Who became the first Nasi from Beis David? Who eventually was the first descendant of David to take over? Who was? If you would have a Reb Tzaddik, you could look at the next line and tell me the answer. Okay, V'oz Nifchar Hillel, Shul Menuk B'Sud B'Beis David L'Nasi. When did Malchus return to Yehuda in any sense? By Hillel. Hillel is not Shaven. He's not Makar. Right, he's the son of Beis David, what he calls the Nukvista, the female of Beis David. He means female, he means passive power. Shul B'Tchilas Malchus Hordis, Shul Meya B'Shol Yishan B'Fnei Abayis. Bilal Abad of Meya B'Fnei Abayis, Kishon L'Chazal. So listen to what he's saying, and you'll appreciate it. Good, if not, if you remember it, you'll appreciate it eventually. In Golos, the power of Yiddishkeit, of organized Yiddishkeit in Golos, is never Shevet. It's never Shevet. There's no Yehuda. Well, you also Shevet in Yehuda. There's no Malchus of Yehuda. Because in Golos, we're not Zeicha to more than the Hayd on the level of the Chashmonaim or on the level of Hillel, which is the maximum. Which means that Yiddishkeit in Golos cannot enforce itself. There's no Shevet, there's no Makal, there's no Memshala. Yiddishkeit doesn't have the power of enforcing the things that are important. It's all dependent on Hoyd, on Mamalki Rabbanon. A lot of the frustration in Prumkeit, Moimi Boy, in Bateidinim, are Aguda problems that come up because you know, we can't enforce things. You can't go to the Torah, you can pass it, but you can't enforce. You know, you tell them they have to give a get, but you can't enforce it. You can, but beyond that, it's in regular Prumkeit issues. People are frustrated when Prumkeit issues come up that were powerless. We're sure, we're positive, and we're powerless to enforce. But that's Golus. Golus is a kayach of Yiddishkeit that relies on Hoyd. Hoyd is the appreciation of the observer, or of the person asking the shayla. Nobody today is forced to ask shaylas. Nobody today is forced to follow a psak. Yiddishkeit is always up to a person. But there was at least a time when there was a certain amount of pressure, either pressure because the melech could enforce it, or even pressure because of society. If all the yidden living in a city are from, a certain pressure, peer pressure, is produced. In galus, it doesn't exist. Or it exists in a very minimal way. The kayach of shevet doesn't exist, which is why we don't pass it like shama. Shama was tkifus. We don't have tkifus. We don't have hallowing in galus. That's not, we don't have that kayach. You know, Palm used to say very often, nishtala kem in helfer. Problems would come up and couldn't be resolved. Sometimes individual problems. Palm told me once that there's a woman with Shalom Bayis problems who spoke to her a few times. Now she keeps on sticking notes into his door slot. You should please call her. She can't get through there. So Palm mentioned it to me and he said he doesn't call her back. Mishtala came in helping. I'd like to help her. But, you know, not everybody can you help. That doesn't mean you should give up right away. I remember once on a tzibur dikka problem of a tzibur, where some people had suggested a resolution. Our palm worked on it for 5 or 6 months, trying to get everyone to go along with this resolution. And at the end, it didn't work. And it sort of fell through. And I remember being very upset. And the next time I visited Rav Palm in his house, this is when he was mostly homebound, I told him, if the resolution is right, so why not push it through? Why not force it through? Rav Palm said then, you know, you can't. You can't always do it. You can't. So what's going to be with the problem? I don't know. You can't resolve every problem. Now, when you're the police commissioner in town, you know, you sort of have to come up with something. But we don't have malchus. We don't have makom. We don't have shevet. It doesn't work that way. And that's one of the most frustrating things in the godless, is that we don't have the power to enforce things and make things straight where they're obviously wrong. I think that if somebody does a study of takanis of kehilais over the last 2,000 years, you'll find that in hindsight, the takanis are probably 99% good, 99% good ideas, and they probably fail 99% of the time too, because we don't have it. A chayrin, putting people in chayrin, was the most ineffective way of dealing with things in Klal Yisrael's history. A lot of the biggest disasters came when somebody was put into chayrin, and he got a lot of fame because of it. Because even chayrin doesn't always work. They put a book in chayrin, so everyone's curious about what it says. They must see something interesting. So you give it free publicity. That's the way it is. The fact is that way. When you put something in chayrim, it increases the sale of the book. Right? No one would have ever heard of Zalman Rushdie not for the fact that they put a death sentence on him. So as soon as they put a death sentence on him, they rushed to print 1 million copies of his book. You know? And it's just the way it is. When there's no shevet, when there's no malchus. Malchus doesn't come from people. Malchus comes from HaKadosh Baruch. The power of Malchus, of David HaMelech, is from the Rabbeinu Shalom. Because it just doesn't work by itself. So the mistake of the Chashmonaim, Rav Tzadik is saying, is confusing Hayit and Malchus. Is when you reach Hayit, to think that because you reached Hayit, so you can reach Malchus. And that was a mistake. That's the mistake that a lot of good intention people have nowadays in their frustrations with problems in Yiddishkeit. Problems, either individual problems they have, or more so, tzibur-dikka problems. There are a lot of tzibur-dikka problems, no question. There are a lot of problems that Klal Yisrael has. So everyone has eitzim. They should do, they should do this, right? They should do, really they should, right? Why don't they? So, you know, one of the conversations I wish I would have taped a couple of years ago, you know, someone came to me all angry. It was a Sunday morning, yesterday, Sunday morning share. So those two people came together and said, you know, then there were a lot of scandals with from people. So they came with kindness on the Gedolei Yisrael. They should, you know, they should teach honesty. They should, the yeshiva should, they. So I told them, you know, at the least I go to the convention. I made myself innocent. They said, what do you mean? Didn't you hear them speak at the end of the convention? I said, no, we don't go to the convention. Well, you don't go. Well, we have to go to the convention. Palmer, Balishrei, and the Mithril spoke about honesty. But you don't go. So Mustami saw the Jewish observer. They don't get the Jewish observer. I asked them, country Yossi you get? Yeah, country Yossi. So why do you complain to Gedolei Yisrael? Why did you complain to country Yossi? What did country Yossi speak about? You know? The Gedolei Yisrael, you know, the Moshel, the Shevet, the country Yossi. I don't mean him in particular, it just what came to mind. You know, so complain to country Yossi and to whoever else it is. So they came all angry and upset, and granted, this person was in Tarvadas, and I told him that, you know, you and Yeshiva so many years, you're saying, why did the Gedolei speak about it? You never went to our Palm Shmuzim on Fridays. Our Palm spoke about it. You never went to Shmuzim. You know, when someone gets up to speak and they say, you ran out. Now you come, why don't they? Why don't they? They is not the Gedolei, they is you. You know, the people. But Tachim Advarim, this is just the way it is in Galus. In Galus it is this way. That when somebody gets up to say Mitzvah, everybody runs out. And when you have a choice between reading an article about honesty, you know, in the Jewish Observer, which, after all is said and done, is not the most exciting topic, you know. And you can read a different article, which has to do with something more controversial or, you know, something more exciting. So you choose the other thing. Okay? That's a lack of appreciation of Haid. But that's what Haid is. Haid is the Mida of the Nukva. It's a Mida of passivity. It's something which is not active. It doesn't come and grip you. So that's the mistake of Matisyahu. Matisyahu thought that he's going to be Malchus. And there's no Malchus in Golus. Golus is not Malchus. Golus is not, nothing is going to come and grab you. I don't just mean that the police aren't going to come and do it, but it's not going to come and grab you. You know, you're going to go, if you will already go to the convention, sitting through five straight speeches is not going to exactly be the most enticing way of spending your day. It won't be. And you can sit through five speeches and hear 10 minutes worth of something that appeals to you. And somehow, if you remember it, it makes a roshim at work. But Pishat Maiseh, it's kind of hard. Kind of difficult. Because look, not everyone hits the nail on the head. And not everyone speaks for everybody. And it's not easy. I'm amazed. Somehow, whenever I speak at the convention, I don't go for Shabbos. Whenever they ask me to speak, it's Sunday morning. Once it was Sunday lunchtime. I remember I got to speak. I was the last speaker at the convention. I said that I started with something to the effect that all of you must have heard a dozen speeches already. Everyone started laughing. I said a dozen. You know, a dozen? A dozen? You know, 3 dozen. You know, so it's you know, it's kind of hard to make it to grab a person. It's very hard to point the gun at a person and tell them to listen to Moshe. But it doesn't work. So in Galus, it's Haid, it's not Malchus, which means we have to have an appreciation of Haid. We have to have an appreciation of Haid, or a Man Malki Rabbanon. We have to have an appreciation of the fact that when push comes to shove, the level to which you're going to be compelled to stick with the frumkeit that you have depends on you, not on others. Depends on you. Depends on whether you are willing to, whether it's to hear a drasha, to hear a mussar, or to open a sefer and look at it, The amount that you're compelled to do things has to come from you. It's Hilal Nasi, Nashana. It's all dependent on the person who's willing. If the person is willing, so then there's Malchus. Then there's Malchus and Galus too. If the person is not willing, then there's no Malchus and Galus. Because the Malchus and Galus is all a Malchus of Hayim. That's what Tzaddik's appreciation of the message of the Malchus Chashmonaim. And like I said at the outset, I don't know if it means that much to you at the moment, but I think as life's experiences come your way, and as you keep on hearing about the frustrations they should do, sometimes you feel they should do, you say we should do, you have to come to the appreciation that it's up to each person. There's as much malchus on you as you're willing to go out and find. If you're not willing to find it, then it's not going to be there. It's not going to be simple to find. So that's where Tzaddik's appreciation. Okay?
Okay, it's Parsha to talk a little about Hishtadlus and Betachin. In particular, there's a medrash at the beginning of the Parsha. In the beginning of the Parsha that says, Ashrei HaGever Asher Som Hashem Iftachai Ze Yosef. That praised is the person who's a Baal Betachin, that's Yosef. V'lapane El Rahavim. Shall you day Shalom al Asar Hamashkin? Ki in Zechartani v'Iskarti Nitaisav Lo Shtei Shanu. Because at the end of last week's parasha, he told Asar Hamashkin a double lashon, Ki in Zechartani v'Iskarti v'Iskarti. So he was added for each lashon that he asked Asar Hamashkin to remember him. He was punished with 1 year, the 2 years that he had to sit in jail. Beyond that point, so the kasha is obvious that the Medrash says that Yosef was punished because for 2 years because he didn't because he put his faith into the Sar Hamashkin. So he was punished that he sat in the jail for 2 more years. So that's okay, that's a chiddush, but that we understand. But what are you telling me, Ashrei HaGever Shasam Hashem Iftachai Zei Yosef? It doesn't sound, it sounds just the opposite, that Ashrei HaGever Asher Som Hashem Iftachai Ein Zei Yosef. So this medrash needs a hesber. And there are two mahalchim that I'd like to share with you. And each of them has its own yisayid. I don't think it's a machlaikis. One of them is the mahalch of the Beis HaLevi, which I mentioned here in I think previous years, and not last year, but certainly a few years ago. And the second is the Mahalach of the Chazon Ish in his Sefer Emunah and Betachin, which I first saw for the first time last night. So each one of you cited in Hishtadlus, and I'd like to share with you each of them. They're Pashat Halach Lomaitzah. What the requirements of Hishtadlus and Betachin are. It's one of the big struggles to be able to balance how much Hishtadlus a person has to do for Parnasa and how much Betachin a person should have. First, the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi says the aside. He says, the sheer Hishtadlus Hanirza Ein Eishava B'chav Adam. His aside, which maybe should be obvious, is that the sheer of Hishtadlus that is required of a person is not the same for everybody. It could be for one person more ishtadlus is mutter, and for one person less ishtadlus is mutter. Eidei shava l'chal adam. So what is the sheer of ishtadlus? What is the amount of ishtadlus? What is the rule? It's very hard to figure it out exactly, but what is the rule of ishtadlus that a person can have? So he says a very interesting aside. Huta loyha hishtadlus kidei shiyia loy siyua shiyagia lemadregas habayteach. Says something which at first glance is sounds twisted, but you think about it, you understand what he means. He says hishtadlus is mutter because hishtadlus gets you to a level of betachin. What does that mean? Betachin means you just have faith. Hashem, Well, give me parnasa, it's Paschal Rosh Hashanah, whatever parnasa I'll get, and finish. Ishtadlus means that if I try, it'll affect what happens. So what does it mean? You're allowed to do ishtadlus, so you should get to a point of betachin. Ishtadlus and betachin seem to be opposites. So Beis HaLevi says, no, most people don't really have betachin. That is, today I just don't go to work. This whole week I don't show up at work, that I'll make just as much money this year as if I show up at work. If I have a business, I don't open my store for a week, I'll end up making just as much money as I would otherwise. Most people are not really Balei Betachin at that level. And they're not Betuach. They don't feel Betuach. Mishtadlus is mutter. You're supposed to be mishtadl to reach a point where now you feel that the Rebbeinu Shlomo will give me a parnasa. You feel that it's totally you're Beteach Hashem. A person opens up a normal business in a normal place where it's normal to have customers. So that amount of mishtadlus, now he feels Betuach that I'll have parnasa. That's the amount of mishtadlus that a person is supposed to put into what he does. When a person puts in that amount of ishtadlus beyond that is wasted, and ishtadlus to that point is the amount of effort that's necessary, which means that if you have something sort of to hang your hat on, that you'll have a parnasa, so to go and to look for a backup parnasa just in case, or something beyond that, that's already more too much ishtadlus. Ishtadlus is supposed to be an amount of ishtadlus that you feel comfortable. Everybody's different. So with this amount of ishtadlus, you'll be able to be matzliach. Navi, we find Shaul the first time he goes to Mokama, Perek Yigimel of Shmuel Aleph, he takes 3,000 people with him to the war. 3,000 is very little. To go to war, it's a very few number of people. And the Mefarshim there say, "Haya betuach b'Hashem shiachal lohishia b'rabbi mat." He had betachin. See, well, with 3,000 people, he felt that is how much of Hashem, and as I go, 3,000 people or 300,000 people, what's the difference? So the kasha then is, so why did he take 3,000 people? He could have gone with 300 people. Doesn't matter to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. It doesn't matter 3,000 or 300,000. Doesn't matter 300 or 3,000. I could have gone with three people. Well, Yenison went with two people. Well, why 3,000? According to the Beis HaLevi, we understand the person has to be mishtadl the amount that he feels batuach, that he feels that the derech hateva it could come. The avoda mishtadl is to reach a level where you have the tach. This you side of the Beis HaLevi I found in two other places. One is in the Sefer HaMakna on Kiddushin, the end of the Masechta. At the end of the Masechta, we have the Gemara, Meiniach Ani Eskola Umnis Sheba'aylon Veini Malami Bini Yala Taira. We have the idea of a Tana who said that I'm not going to teach my son anything, just Taira. Meiniach Ani Kola Umnis Sheba'aylon Veini Malami Bini Yala Taira. So Makna asks, that's what he means. It's a Mishnah that your person has to teach his son Umnis. What's he saying? Like, me, I don't have to teach my son an Umnis. The Mishnah says a person has to teach his son Torah and Umnis and how to swim. There are things that person has to teach his son. And the Makna says, this theory you find in other places. He gives a few other examples. The Gemara says, Lo Nitna Torah Ela Lo Ichle Haman. Right, that the Torah is given to Eichle Amon. Eichle Amon are people who relied as man of the Amon. They relied that Hashem will send them parnas. And yet, there's the Mishnah that Kol Torah Shein Imay Malacha Sefer B'Teilah. That if he's just going to learn without any type of malacha, without any type of parnas, Sefer B'Teilah, it's going to be bothered. So how do you make these things stem? So the Makna says the same you said. It depends on the person. You're only allowed to have as much, you're only supposed to have as much betachin as you have. The person's only, how much betachin you have, that's how you should behave. If the person feels, but it's on a madrega where he feels batuach, that with a certain amount of ishtadlus will have parnasa, so then that's the amount of ishtadlus he needs. If he feels fearful, you know, he doesn't feel the betachin, it's chasarin, he's supposed to have betachin in Hashem. So you're mishtadl to set yourself up in a way that now you're capable of having the betachin. That amount of ishtadlus that brings a person to the desire is to reach a level, to be a betayach, that's the goal. The goal is to have betachin, that the Baruch Hu send you parnasa. And that's the amount that you need. The third place where this site is in the Mishkan Eliyahu, in the first volume of Mishkan Eliyahu, on page 189. He says, Tzarech Adam Mishkal Archaisav. A person has to measure his actions. L'mayit ha'ashtadlus kifi erech medregasai. A person has to the amount of ishtadlus he has, a kifi erech madrigase, according to his level. I believe he brings there an example that it's an Adam Gadol, I think he says it, Bishrama Salant, who said that if he buys a lottery ticket, that's enough ishtadlus for him. If he buys himself a lottery ticket, so that's enough ishtadlus. He says it doesn't mean that if you and I buy a lottery ticket, that's enough ishtadlus. You buy a lottery ticket, you feel betuach that Hashem will send you parnas with a lottery ticket. If you ask me, it sounds to me like a lottery ticket is a total waste of money. He felt that if Dubai Shalom wants to send it to him, this is enough of a shtadlus, Dubai Shalom will send it. It could be a different way, but that was enough of a shtadlus to make it. Yeah. So the Bechmorel means it as an extreme example. The extreme example is that somebody who's a baitayach, he could do a minimal amount of ishtadlus. Somebody who is more of a baitayach could do a... the ikkar is that we have to remember, with all the ishtadlus that we do, we have to remember that it's all a charade. It's all really a way to wants of us. But it's not the ultimate decider in how successful you are in Parnassa. You have people, two people who open businesses, and one is Matzliach and one is Nas. And two people who go to job interviews, and one person's resume could look better than the other, and who knows who gets the job. There's no, it's totally in so many things that it's all a charade. It's all something that we have to do in order to get Parnassa. But people get carried away with it. People get so carried away with it that they're so into the parnasa that it takes up their mind all day. So carried away by the things they need to do in order to make parnasa that it stares them in the evening, it stares them in the morning, it stares them in their learning, it shows them in their family. When you're just acting, when you're just in a charade and you're playing a part and a role in a play in camp, you know, when you have a part in the role where you're supposed to be sad on stage, you know, as soon as the play is over, you're happy again. You don't continue being sad because you were sad on stage. So a person who puts effort into his ishtadlus, which is what the Rosh Hashanah wants of him, assuming that he has the right level of ishtadlus, when he goes home at night, so then he's there. Your whole ishtadlus is to reach a level of betachin. So if your whole ishtadlus is to reach a level of betachin, that means that you have to teach yourself to be optimistic. What you're doing will work out. I hope you'll take this in the right way, but I want to tell you what Rav Palm did when he was initially ill in 95, I think it was. Rav Palm had a tumor in the stomach. And at that time he had surgery, and afterwards he needed treatment, certain types of chemotherapy. So he went to two doctors. And the two doctors had a machlokes what type of treatment to take. And he decided to go with one doctor whose treatment was a lighter, less aggressive treatment. The mishpacha wasn't so happy with it. Because of the fact, not so much because of the choice of treatment, but because of the particular doctor that he had chosen. And I happen to have had experience with that doctor, with people that I know in the past. And so I went to talk to Rav Palm about it, why he's choosing this and not that. So Rav Palm told me, and this is not something you have to be careful to say for Rabin, he's not asking for everyone who needs medical treatment. He told me the way he looked at it, and the whole Beis HaLevi is it depends on your madrigas, so it's not for everybody necessarily. Rambam said that why? Look, he has a serious illness. He'll survive it. He won't survive it. He doesn't know. Eventually, he'll know. So he's mechiyev to do a shtadl. Shapi halachi is mechiyev to be a shtadl, so that Yeshua could come to derech hateva. So here he has two expert doctors. One says an aggressive thing, a type of treatment which will affect his ability to be in the yeshiva, and one is less aggressive, which won't. So if he's only doing it anyway to be yotze the charade, so to speak, of ishtadlus, so if a good doctor said this way, and a good doctor said that way, he wants to go with him with the easier form of treatment. So that's the way, you know, the Rebbe looks at it, that the whole ishtadlus is the ishtadlus to give the Rebbe Shalom Kaviyachol, to give the person a way to see that Yeshua is going to come to Derech HaTeva from the Rebbe Shalom, to give that Pesach. So that was his ultimate decision. I'm glad that it worked. That particular treatment worked the most well. His stomach cancer never came back. He talks in other places later. But the idea is this idea that whatever ishtadlus we do, we're doing to be yaitzah the chiyus of ishtadlus to come to a point of betach. Once you come to the point of betachin, so then you can do it. Then a person can do it. Without betachin, a person can never do it. A person can never be sure. And there's no limit. So that's the really, that's a big nekuda in Yiddishkeit, that it depends on the person. Everything depends. So many things depend on the person. And certainly, the amount of ishtadlus that a person has to put in, the amount of effort a person has, it depends on the person. But for people to go overboard and to be make themselves to be workaholics, crazy numbers of hours, in most cases it's excessive. It's more than a person needs. Just like in treatment, Rafam held on his level that this treatment was good and that treatment was an unnecessary amount of ishtadlus. So for us, we also have a certain adrega where we could have the tachon to start to put tremendous efforts into doing more. That's not. What does this have to do with Yosef? Ashrei hagever asher shom Hashem etach zeh yosef. The Beis HaLevi says that if one of us, Chalila, was in Paris jail and we told the Sarah Mashkin was getting out for us, and we told him, Zechatani, you know, I did you a favor, remember me to Paris, to us, it would be no kesaret. It would be a normal shtadlus in order to have the tachon. So we have to tell the Sarah Mashkin, you know, help me get out of here. So me and you, it wouldn't be no tzvi on us. That's too much a shtadlus to tell the Sarah Mashkin, you should remember me. But Ashri HaGever Shasom Hashem Ristachai Zei Yosef. Yosef was a person who had the tachon without this ishtadlus. He was a beteach. He was in jail and he knew that things will work out. It says that Afilu Bishor Shehoye Yosef Mutlu B'Dei Sassurim Hoye Batuach Hoye Mamin Sheyeskaimu Chalam Yosef. He knew his dreams will come true. He'll be eventually on a throne and his brothers will come to bow to him. He knew that. He was a beteach. For him, so Ashi again, some ishtach, he said, Yosef, but like Panel Rahavim, to him, this is too much ishtachas. And that's why he got punished 1 year for each word. The whole problem was it was too much ishtachas. So Zichartani is too much ishtachas. Zichartani, and then second time to say it, that's the second year that he was punished. Didn't Major Gossay, that was too much ishtachas. So this is the Yisrael of the Beis HaLevi. If you say Gadol in understanding what Hishtadlus and Betachin is all about, is it really? Is it really true that if it's passed in Rosh Hashanah you'll make the same amount of money, you maybe just quit your job this year? It depends. If you're a person who's on a madrega to have Betachin, you know, it's really true. You have to reach the point where you're a Beiteyach. It has to do with the amount of Hishtadlus that's necessary for his... Agad, the Sefer Ikrim says that when we talk about ishtadlus for parnasa, tefillah is included. Sefer Ikrim says that just like if a person who's not a Baal Madreig just quits his job, so even what's paskin to him from Rosh Hashanah will not necessarily come. Because the paskin Rosh Hashanah requires his level of ishtadlus. He says the same thing, yeah, people who if they were davening, they would have more parnasa. That's the ishtadlus required on them. This is the Mahalach of the Beis HaLevi. It's an important Yisrael, and I find that when I talk to people who are in the Ovei HaKaira, who are in the already going out to work and they have ishtadlus questions, this Beis HaLevi comes into the discussion three quarters of the time. You decide how much do I work? How much overtime do I put in? What do I do? That's the Beis HaLevi, the amount you need to feel a real tzitzach. People used to apply to jobs in different places, and they had two offers. They would ask a firm, you know, they have one offer which is a more formal environment, and one offer which is a more secular, professional environment, but the premise is better. Which one should they take? So the firm would ask them, in the one which is the formal environment, what they're offering you, could you live on it? Do some of you feel that you can live on? He said, yes. He said, take that one. If you're for Tuach, that you can live on that, that's fine. When people get a raise, everybody spends 102% of what they make. Doesn't matter if they make the amount they pay with Bayim or the amount they pay people who are making a lot of money. Everyone seems to need about 102% of what they make. And when you get a raise, you just need more. Now, at a certain point, it may be not enough money to pay the bills. That's our problem. If it's something you can live on, if it's something you can live on, so take it. It'll be fine. Now, this is the Beis HaLevi Mahama. The Chazon Ish is at the end of the second perek of Emunah B'Tachin. And he learns a yisayt from here, but the way I understand the Chazon Ish, just to look at it inside, is mamish in one nekuda, in the hashkafa of Hishtaglis, he's not arguing, but in explaining the Maisa Yosef, it's mamish the opposite. The Chazon Ish's yisayt is that Hishtaglis a person has to do is a normal Hishtaglis, a normal, whatever is normal to help you. You need a parnasa, you do something that's a normal ishtadlis. You open up a business, or you apply for a job. Whatever it is that a person needs for parnasa, a normal ishtadlis is good. But to go and put time and effort, and it's not the time, it's not the effort, it's the heart, the feeling, into a type of ishtadlis, which is a davar rachik, that it'll help, that it's not likely that it's going to help you, that it's going to be helpful, that type of ishtadlis, Chazon Ish says, is not called Ishtaglos. That's like a way out chance that it's going to work. To put effort into that, that a person's not supposed to do. He's supposed to do that. The Ishtaglos, that's normal. Chazon Ish's understanding of the likelihood of this Shagetz helping this Yid who's in jail was so far-fetched that it was a shtadlus, that was the chutzpah teva, chutzpah gedera teva, that the Sar Mashka would help you, Isis. In the Medrash, it says that even when he did help him, after the 2 years, the Medrash seems to be bothered. Why did he help Isis? So Medrash says he wasn't mechavin to help Isis. He wasn't mechavin to help Para. The Medrash, it says that why did the Sar Mashka do it? The Sar Mashka saw Para was so disturbed by his dreams, no one was able to help him. He was thinking that Paro is going to go berserk. And who knows, maybe he'll become sick and he'll die from it, or he'll go nuts and they'll get a different king. He said, if someone else takes over as king, I may lose my job as Sar HaMashkin. Who knows if they'll keep me in my job? So then the Sar HaMashkin started thinking, how can I help myself? And he said, oh, a dream, you know, I once knew somebody who can interpret the dreams, and he called on Yosef. But his desire wasn't to help Yosef. It doesn't work that way. But Pone El Rehoven, you can't put your faith into people who are baligaiva, people who are have only their own interest at heart. He wasn't being a makatoit, the Yosef. He was doing it for his own good, right? Rashi says that even when he expressed it to Para, he expressed it in Manar, Ivri, expressed it in a deriding way. So Zakta Chazon Ish, the Chassarim, in the Ishtadlos of Yosef was the chesaron that he was pushing too hard. Hasidim, they have an expression, mishtupnisht, I guess, right? Mishtupnisht, that you try to work things out. If it doesn't work, you don't push it. You don't try to do it normally. If it doesn't go, don't like push very hard. Okay, you know, a shidduch, you try a shidduch, not working out. If it doesn't work out, don't push, because you want it badly, you start pushing very hard. Well, probably used to advise people, then mishtubnisht. You don't push hard. You do what's a normal ishtadlis, and that's what you have to do. Mechayra, this chazaynish is the opposite of a famous Chaim Shmulevitz. If you remember, Chaim Shmulevitz writes by Bas Parai, when Bas Parai stuck out her hand to reach Meishan. So it says her hand got stretched to reach Meishan. So Kash is, why'd she bother sticking out her hand if she couldn't reach anyway? So Chaim Shmulevitz says this vart, and he's not the only one, that you have to try, even if it can't work with Derech HaTav, you have to do what you could do. So even if it's a very long shot, but you have to try. That seems to be the opposite of Chazinish. Chazinish is saying that don't try unless it makes sense. It's got to make sense. That's how much your style is feeling. Chaim Shmulevitz is saying, you have to try, you always have to try. They're not arguing. What's the difference between Chaim Shmulevitz's piece and the Chazinish? What's the difference? Chazinish says, "Ishtadlus, only try if it's normal, not if it's too much." The Chaim Shmulevitz says, "You have to try, even if it's a long shot, you have to try." Yes, but better. In Gashmius, a person doesn't have to push. You have to try what's normal. You don't have to overdo it. You don't have to work long hours like a workaholic. In Ruchnius, it's just the opposite. In Ruchnius, all the ishtadlus counts. You're supposed to try as much as you could, whatever. No one ever said, learning, don't be a workaholic. Don't stay up late at night learning. Too much ishtadlus. In Ruchnius, the Chaim Shmulevitz is saying you have to put in all your kashrus and all your effort. In Gashmius, enough is enough. You don't have to. Don't overdo it. It's the opposite of people. You know, people when it comes to learning, they rely on their Rabbeinu Shlomo. You know, Bezus Hashem. I'll have to say, Bezus Hashem. I'll start learning. Everything Bezus Hashem. Comes to working, it's all ishtadlus. Everything is ishtadlus. It's just the opposite. You're working, the whole ishtadlus is, you know, just do enough ishtadlus. And when it comes to ruchnius, there it depends on your ishtadlus taka. There your ishtadlus decides how much ruchnius you have. It's just the opposite. So I was wondering about the shidduchim, about dating. Something doesn't go. Do you push it? Don't you push it? There's in the Crane of Igrisa, somebody asked the stipler, he's dating a girl, and the girl decided no. And he's trying to push that it should be anyway. He thinks it's a good shidduch. Should he push it? Should he push it? So he asked the stipler, maybe it's a siman rashamayim. If it doesn't go smoothly, it's a siman. It's not the right shidduch. So he asked the stipler. So the stipler writes back that you can't say klolim in this minyan. It's hard to say klolim. Sometimes the shtupping is helpful. It works out at the end. And sometimes the shtupping is a waste of energy. And if I care, if it doesn't work out, it's very hard to say klolim. And it's impossible to know for sure. And that's basically his answer. I think those of you who read the story of the stipler's first meeting with the woman who became his wife, it's well known. The stipler married the Chazanish's sister. The Chazanish was the shakhan, and they didn't go out. They sat in, and the stipler fell asleep at the beginning of the date. It was a long date because she didn't want to wake him until he woke up. And afterwards, she told the Chazanish she doesn't think this one's for him. He asked, "Do you see anything wrong with him?" He said, "No, I didn't see anything." The Chazanish asked the stipler, "What happened?" The stipler said that, you know, I have this seder. The stipler had a seder. I think he stayed up whatever number of hours in a row. He had his own seder. He stayed up like 30 hours in a row, and then he slept 6 hours. And then he stayed up 30 hours, and he slept 6 hours. That was his, I don't know about the numbers exactly, so something like that. He said here he was going to meet this girl, and he had to go on the train on the way. So he fixed up his schedule so that it was a 3-4 hour train ride. The sleeping would be on the train. So he stayed up his 30 hours, and then on the train he was going to sleep. When he got on the train, it was cushioned seats, which are shiloh of shatnas. So he didn't sit down, he stood the whole way. So on top of the 30 hours, he was standing on the train for 4 hours. So, you know, so he fell asleep. So the stipler, you know, he said he wants another chance. So he got another chance, and ultimately they married. That was his revenue. The stipler said, you know, sometimes you dash your business, sometimes not, there's no clock. So when I saw the few times I saw people come to him with the question, people came to me, I was telling them to go to Rav, so I always knew what the answer was. So Pam usually told people not to shtup. Now, being that I'm telling Rav Pam secrets today anyway, what bothered me is I found out later that when Rav Pam met the woman that was ultimately his wife, he shtupped in order for it to happen. It didn't go so smoothly. And he himself did shtup in order to make the shidduch. He was already by then older bacher. And the Pam started teaching him the Masifta yeah, when he was a bacher. And he shtup. I just wondered why he told everyone he not to shtup, and he shtup, and he was happily married, don't get me wrong. So why did he... why did he shtup? So I was thinking about this theory between the Chazai Nish and the Rechaim Shmulevitz. Chazai Nish says, Mishtup Nisht. Chaim Shmulevitz says, you have to shtup, you have to try. What's the difference? One is talking about Gashmias, and one is talking about Ruchnias. One is talking about Ruchnistic pursuits, you have to push. One is talking about Gashmiastic pursuits. Gashmias, you just do normal Ishtabnas. So I suppose it depends on what the person's Kavana is when he's dating, what he's looking for. Is it a Gashmiastic experience or is it a Ruchnistic experience? How is he choosing a life? It depends. Everyone has Ishtabnas on his level. If it's Ruchnias, so Mishtut. Have to try. If it's Gashmias, so then you know, Mishtupnish. Depends where the person's coming from. There's a lot of things in life, it depends where a person's coming from. So it depends. Depends what the focus is. But Al Kaparim, this is the Chazanish Yisai. The Chazanish Yisai, which is important Yisai in Ishtadlus, is your Ishtadlus, if you have normal Ishtadlus, don't go. Don't go wild over possible Parnassa avenues, possibly. Go with a normal, calm avenue. And Yosef's mistake was trying something that was just too much. The opposite, the Beis HaLevi seems to say that for me and you, this would be normal shtab. But he says, no, this is too much. These are two Yisaidas in the Ishtablos, the Yisaid of the Beis HaLevi, that Ishtablos depends on the person. Instead of the Chazai Nish, that not too much.
So they're not so different.
In Lamaisa, they're not different. Explaining Yosef, that, what Yosef could have expected from the Sarah Mashkin, they are quite different. Chazai Nish is saying this was a shtadlus that was it wasn't teva, it was not normal. And they say, "Hey, for me, you, it's normal, just not for Yosef." And here they're saying, "In Halach Lamaisa, what they had to behave, they're not different at all." Right, Chanukah is leaving. Let me just share with you one last quick vertical on Chanukah, which I heard this year, and I just can't resist saying it. I don't remember if I told it to you in my house on Chanukah. I think I just mentioned it to while we were schmoozing. But Shmuel Birnbaum's Vart, why the eighth day of Chanukah is called Zeis Chanukah. The Gevaldige Vart, if you know Shmuel Birnbaum, it fits the way Adavah and Misha Amarat. He said, why is it called Zeis Chanukah? He said, because Chanukah comes. We know Chanukah was Lashkichon Teresecha, and the Yevanim lost. And yet comes Chanukah, and you know, second Seder. No second Seder, you have to go light. But first, some people don't even pay to come second Seder, so you have to leave anyway. They don't even pay to come first Seder, because you have to leave no second Seder. And the second half of second Seder is certainly knocked off, and night Seder already is. It's already if we're spending time with the family. So you know the whole Saddam and the Yeshiva are affected negatively because of Chanukah. Shmuel Birnbaum said that you know when the eighth day of Chanukah comes on a weekday, when the eighth day of Chanukah comes, it's still Chanukah. On the eighth day, you don't go light anymore. At the eighth day of Chanukah, you don't light that night. So the eighth day of Chanukah, second Seder, so here you For 7 days, you weren't, you didn't want a second seder, ninth seder. Then here, the eighth day, he said, you have to go light. So you stay a whole second seder, you stay for ninth seder. He said, oh, Zoyf Chanukah, that's Chanukah. Kedos of Chanukah. Chanukah is when people battle the Lashkichon Teresach. So I hope and pray that we come back next year. We should have a next week. So people next year. We come back next week. We should have a Refuah Shleima from this distraction, which Chanukah brings to us. We should be able to, if I can, sometimes the break allows a person to gather his energy and to start again with a cheshek. We are starting the new sugya Yitz Hashem on Monday. I hope everyone will come back. You have Sof Chanukah Shabbos and Yisro Chag is Sunday, and Monday we'll start again. I hope everybody will come with the energy to start again. A good Shabbos.